KBOO, KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Just about 9 o'clock here on this Thursday morning. Join us in about a half hour for Fight the Empire. Pear is back and he follows up on his show last week and talks some more about banks and debt and how much debt we really have. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, a major protest planned this weekend against Donald Trump and NBC outside the building where Saturday Night Live is produced. Also, domestic workers fight for their rights in California and what comes next in the battle for immigrant rights. At 11 on Between the Covers, we speak with award-winning author Colm McCann about 13 Ways of Looking, his new short fiction collection. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Portland's Lillian M. Whitlow returns with Lift Every Voice and Sing, an anthology of short biographies of outstanding African Americans. That's all coming up this morning, but first, as soon as she gets through traffic, Teresa Mitchell will be hosting with Press Watch. She's back, and you'll get the news you're not supposed to know right after this on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first CMJ College Day on Tour, Saturday, November 7th at Holocene in Portland. College Day aims to fill a day with great programming and speakers from and related to college and non-commercial radio, allowing both new and experienced voices from the radio world to talk about the issues that matter most to them. At this all-ages event, there will be live music, innovative workshops, presentations, and interviews with key members of the music and radio world from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Again, that's College Day on Tour, Saturday, November 7th at Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. Well, I've been out of town for a couple of weeks, and I spent most of that time in a little town near Puerto Vallarta. Puerto Vallarta, as you may know, is a tourist economy town on the south end of Banderas Bay, Jalisco, Mexico. It's on the Pacific, well into the tropics, and I was just an hour's walk up the strand from Puerto Vallarta, technically in Nayarit State in Bucerías. It's a wonderful deal for me because I was invited there by some very generous and hardworking people who allowed me to stay there for free. It was my intention to relax there, and I did. But as it turns out, the place was in the gun sights of Hurricane Patricia. So for a couple of days, my relaxation turned to frenzied activity, the more so when we learned that the thing had suddenly turned from a tropical storm into a force 5 plus 220 mile per hour hurricane. Yeah, no kidding. That was the peak speed. There were a couple of hours in which I and others anxiously watched the dedicated NOAA satellite feed of Patricia. And you might wonder, why didn't I get the heck out of the way? Well, while there was time to get out of the way, it was just a tropical storm. Won't this be pleasant? Here we are, 60-mile-per-hour winds. I'm in a reinforced concrete structure. No problem. And then all of a sudden, bam, it's a monster. And so we're watching the dedicated NOAA satellite feed. Hooray for NOAA. More about them in a minute. And as you know, the hurricane turned away in the last few hours before landfall and hit a sparsely populated area. That would be all I have to say about this, but I mean, I would say that I am relieved that no great catastrophe hit me and my relatives. I really am, but there's more to the story. The experience of this hurricane was wrong. Something was very different. We watched with anxiety as it drew closer, and then we could see on the satellite that it was hitting. Literally, that tropical wind force bands were directly at and over our location, but the winds stayed calm where we were at. There were no wind. There was no wind right there at the hotel, none at all. No rain and no sound above of winds. It was dark. Weirdly, the barometer, the brass barometer mounted on the wall of the little hotel, which works fine, did not indicate a drop. The monster passed over us, and then it trashed Guadalajara, well inland at 5,108 feet. Following the map and the direction of the storm, I found that it left the state of Jalisco largely untouched, except for a 30-mile-wide swath around the eye, where it did indeed destroy a coastal hamlet, until it reached the towns that lay a few thousand feet altitude. Then it is clear that the whole storm was hitting on a much wider scale. To be more specific, its wider bands completely passed over Puerto Vallarta and Bucerías. Then it went dozens of miles inland and slammed into San Sebastián del Oeste at 4,856 feet. It trashed Mascota, also well inland, at about the same altitude, and ironically, it smashed into Guadalajara, more than 80 miles inland and over 5,000 feet altitude, and I say ironically because people had gone there to be safe from the hurricane. On YouTube, you can find video of people in Guadalajara screaming as they climb onto the tops of their cars as they're swept along municipal streets in 5 feet of roaring water, and man, those cars are moving. Hurricane Patricia, so far as I can tell from examining the effects on different altitudes, is a different kind of storm, different shape of storm. The damage pattern implies that it had a sort of flattened tornado shape. Now, that's my guess. I'm just looking at where it went and where it struck, so that much of the storm can pass overhead, did pass overhead, and only cause damage when it slams into mountains. That's a hurricane? The wind energy of this new type of super global warming storm is thousands of feet aloft. For this new type, warning models will have to be changed. And I challenge meteorologists to get on this. Something different is happening, and the facts will bear this out. I'll have more on global warming later in the show. Call in if you directly experience Patricia, 503-231-8187. Now, of course, there's a lot more happening in the world, and Patricia is old news, so to speak, except, as I was saying, for the fact that, something strange was going on. This from TELUS Sur TV. Conservatives rallied around the officer as a hero, but authorities say he staged a carefully crafted suicide just before his theft was about to be exposed. Residents of Chicago, Illinois, who praised Lieutenant Charles Joseph Glinowitz as a hero who died in the line of duty, are now coming to terms with revelations announced by local authorities who say the officer was corrupt, stealing thousands of dollars from a youth program, and chose to commit suicide just before his theft was about to be exposed. Now, this is mainstream news. What makes it news you're not supposed to know is just going back and pushing back against the usual regime of forgetting, of amnesia, and remembering that this incident was used to bash Black Lives Matter. Returning to the article, Glinowitz committed the ultimate betrayal to the citizens he served, the entire law enforcement community, according to the Crimes Task Force leader, Falinko. The facts of his actions, he said, proved he behaved for years in a manner completely contrary to the image he portrayed. End quote. The revelations come after weeks of a costly manhunt for three non-existent suspects, two white and one black, with more than 100 investigators involved. Thousands attended the funeral. Civil rights activist Sean King blasted conservatives and the media on Wednesday for what he argued was reckless and dangerous reporting and claims about the Black Lives Matter movement activists who are facing an intense backlash from conservative media and commentators for speaking out against police brutality and corruption. Sean King wrote, not nearly enough media covering Officer Glinowitz killing himself and conservatives saying it was a Black Lives Matter execution. And Ron Hosko, former assistant director of the FBI and current president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Forum, wrote a widely shared op-ed for USA Today the day after Glinowitz killed himself, linking his murder, in his terms, to the Black Lives Matter movement. Even when USA Today and InfoWars published these dangerous articles, absolutely no proof or hint of proof existed to link the death of Glinowitz to the Black Lives Matter movement. That's what King wrote. He said he'd only been dead for hours and the investigation had only started, but outrageous blame was already being placed on the activists. So let's remember, this is a knee-jerk response, and we've seen it before, and probably we'll see it again. Blame Black Lives Matter. Now to headlines. This from Russia Today. The Syrian army has seized the strategic highway to Aleppo. They've cleared out terrorist groups controlling the Kanasar-Adaraya Highway, southeast of the country's second largest city, Aleppo, after nearly 10 days of fierce fighting. Dozens of fighters have been killed as combat specialists began to demine the area, which has been rigged with explosives. The army, supported with airstrikes conducted by the Russian task force in Latakia, has unblocked the vital supply route connecting the areas near Aleppo, is now controlled by the regular troops of President Assad. The military expects traffic on the highway will be open today. Time is 9:11. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Glad to be back. Headline, Port-au-Prince, from Radio Havana, Cuba. Haiti's electoral authorities reported Tuesday that preliminary results of the elections will not be disclosed immediately, as expected, and as mandated by national electoral law, but will be delayed until Thursday. Haiti's electoral watchdog, the Provisional Electoral Council, justified the decision, saying that it preferred continuing its ongoing investigations. There have been numerous fraud complaints received during and after the vote. Quoting the official press release, out of the 162 complaints the commission, the council received, 43 are being processed and investigated. Camille Chalmers, an economics professor and director of the Haitian Platform to Advocate Alternative Development, told Telesur, "The elections definitely lacked legitimacy." He added that the decision to delay the election results is not based on national actors, but international bodies who are highly influenced by U.S. hegemony in the region. Quoting Chamblers, people did not massively participate in the vote due to the lack of credibility of a system that does not belong to them, and above all, due to the country's context of military occupation. Although the election day was calm overall, many complaints followed about alleged fraud, and he said not giving the results in due time can result in an electoral coup like has already happened in the past. Hey, sound familiar? Those who remember George W. Bush? Many people, he said, remain in a climate of impunity that discredits the Haitian electoral system. He warned Haitians to be wary of hegemonic policies imposed by the United States, which can violate democracy. A hegemony, in case you don't already know, is a situation created of overall power. It is a context. Now back to global warming. New York State is warning to prepare for up to 6 feet of sea level rise over the next decades. New York State is telling developers and homeowners in New York City and coastal towns that they should prepare in their building for up to 75 inches of sea level rise by 2100. The sea level rise projections, based on recent scientific studies by NASA and Columbia University, are part of the New York Community Risk and Resiliency Act, passed after the devastation caused by Hurricane Sandy in 2012. And this is where I want to depart from this that is written down and say that time and time again over the years, I have observed that these predictions are far too conservative and that the water is coming, will come, and it won't be 2100. And 5 years from now, we'll be saying something very different about how much water is present and how much water is coming in terms of sea level rise. But returning to the article, it says the state says it is creating new sea level rise regulations requiring coastal planners, developers, and builders to expect seas could rise up to 6 feet and to build more resilient homes and other structures. New York officials say that 500,000 people live in areas that lie less than 6 feet above the mean high tide line in the state. The scientific studies took into account increasing melting of ice sheets and glaciers in Greenland and Antarctica. Want to talk about global warming? Want to talk about Hurricane Patricia? If you were there, 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. 8187, a new paper published in Nature and mentioned in ArsTechnica.com, takes on the ambitious task of connecting micro and macro level estimates of climate costs. The study finds that climate change can be expected to reshape the global economy by reducing average global incomes roughly 23% by the year 2100. So speaking for myself, this is going to hit you right in the pocketbook. And as I was saying before, it's going to hit you sooner than you know. This study is important, they write, because it solves a problem that has existed in prior models of climate change effects on economics, discrepancies between macro and micro level observations. The study presents the first evidence that economic activity in all regions is coupled in some way to global climate. The study also sets up a new empirical paradigm for modeling economic loss in response to climate change. Number to call, 503-231-8187. The study uses data from the years 1960 to 2010 to analyze what's clearly a complex relationship between temperature and economic productivity. The author's analysis uses a novel approach to dealing with confounding variables, which allow them to account for four important factors. First, constant differences between countries, such as cultural differences. Secondly, common contemporaneous shocks such as global price changes. Third, country-specific trends and growth rates. And fourth, nonlinear effects of annual average temperature and rainfall. This modeling allowed them to examine whether country-specific deviations from growth trends were related to country-specific differences in temperature and precipitation trends while accounting for any global shifts that would be experienced to affect all countries. Now, if you're thinking this is getting a little wonky, it is, but I'm getting to the point right here. The main results from this analysis show that there's an overall nonlinear pattern in the relationship between temperature and economic development. Instead of a linear relationship, the productivity rises steadily and slowly until it reaches a peak at the ideal average temperature for productivity, 55 degrees Fahrenheit. So this is what they arrived at. 55 degrees Fahrenheit is a peak. Then past this peak ideal temperature, there is a very sharp and steady decline in productivity as temperatures continue to rise. This relationship is partly due to geographic effects, and as most low-income countries are in warmer regions and therefore likely to suffer stronger effects from climate change, by contrast, richer and more industrial countries tend to be in more temperate areas, so climate change will have a less severe effect on their economies. And just speaking for myself, Portland is very much in the middle of this, and people around the country and around the world are becoming aware that Portland is being affected less severely and is likely to be, of course, I don't really know this, but is likely, according to the models, to be less severely affected by this climate change, which, as I also mentioned, is accelerating. I guess I implied that, but let me just say it now. Climate change is clearly accelerating. Article by John Timmer, also from Ars Technica. NOAA is one of three main organizations to keep track of the global temperatures, NASA's and the UK Met Office being the others. Like the rest of them, the NOAA updates its temperature record as improved methods or data become available. Its latest effort to do so was notable only because of the results. Previous records had suggested that global temperature increases slowed down recently. The update indicated that this was largely an artifact or an error due to how some ocean temperatures were handled. And speaking for myself, to explain, they discovered that there was a lot more heat in the ocean than they had registered. It was simply a little deeper, and now it's coming out. And so these temperatures worldwide are rising rapidly, and this is the hottest year ever. So return to the article. Congressman Lamar Smith, Republican of Texas, is clearly not happy with the fact that the apparent pause in temperatures has gone away. So he started issuing requests for the data and methods used in the analysis. When NOAA pointed out that these were already publicly available, Smith issued subpoenas for all correspondence related to the temperature record. And the politician issued a statement suggesting NOAA scientists colluded to manipulate the record for political ends. It's right out there in front of his face. It's science. He's confused. He's trying to subpoena it. Update. Even as third parties tried to defend the scientific record, Congressman Lamar Smith's office has continued his war of words against the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in a press release, issued this week. Smith reiterated his suggestion that NOAA's updated temperature data was a fraudulent manipulation performed for political reasons. Smith claims his actions are an attempt to understand the agency's decision to alter temperature data to show warming. And in a letter demanding NOAA respond to his subpoena for all correspondence related to the temperature update, he suggests its refusal simply raises more suspicions. Deficiencies in NOAA's response to the committee's request raises serious concerns about what role officials at NOAA, including political appointees, had in the decision to adjust the temperature data and widely publicized conclusions based on those adjustments, end quote. The release quotes his letter as suggesting that the NOAA may be opening itself up to civil or criminal enforcement mechanisms against NOAA science, if you can believe that. And I can. I escaped from Texas in 1990. Seth Bornstein writes in the Detroit News, Americans are hot but not too bothered by global warming. Most Americans know the climate is changing, but they say they are not just that, they're just not that worried about it. According to a new poll by the Associated Press and the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, and that is keeping the American public from demanding and getting the changes that are necessary to prevent global warming from reaching a crisis, according to climate and social scientists. Speaking for myself, I rather thought Hurricane Patricia was a crisis. I'm really glad it wasn't more of a crisis for me. But returning to the article, by the way, if you have comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Call Press Watch at KBOO, 503-231-8187. As top-level international negotiations try to limit greenhouse gas emissions. Greenhouse gas emissions is what the Texas senator is talking, or our congressman is talking about. Greenhouse gas emissions start later this month in Paris, and the AP-NORC poll taken in mid-October shows about 2 out of 3 Americans accept global warming, and the vast majority of those say human activities are at least part of the cause. However, fewer than 1 in 4 Americans are extremely or very worried about it, according to the poll of 1,058 people. About 1 out of 3 Americans are moderately worried, and the highest percentage of those polled, 38%, were not too worried or not at all worried. Despite high-profile preaching by Pope Francis, only 36% of Americans see global warming as a moral issue, and only 25% of those asked see it as a fairness issue, according to the poll, which has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.7 percentage points. Now, going back to Hurricane Patricia, there was an article about it in smh.com, sydneymorningherald.com.au. They write, first there was Super Typhoon Haiyan, which peaked out at 170 knot or 315 kilometer per hour winds in 2013 as it slammed the Philippines. And now there's Patricia. This is written just before Patricia hit. Forecast to soon hit Mexico with current estimated maximum sustained winds of 175 knots. And speaking for myself, of course, it went even higher than that before it hit land. Returning to the article, it was officially the strongest hurricane ever measured, even at that point, by the U.S. National Hurricane Center based on its wind speed and its minimum central pressure, 880 millibars. Remember what I said about the barometer? Not budging? Freaking weird. Returning to the article, the wind measurement makes Patricia the strongest hurricane on record in the National Hurricane Center's area of responsibility, which includes the Atlantic and the eastern North Pacific basins. And in this case, the measurement has added weight because it is based on data collected from an aircraft rather than mere satellite imagery. And they said, we would like to acknowledge deeply the Air Force hurricane hunters for their observations, establishing Patricia as a record-breaking hurricane. Clearly, without their data, we would never have known just how strong a tropical cyclone it was. That's according to NHC forecaster Richard Posch, the morning just before the hurricane hit. So, how could this happen? The first reason is the presence of an El Niño year, which generally leads to hyperactive hurricane activity in the eastern Pacific basin. That's according to Kerry Emanuel of MIT. Emmanuel has derived a way of measuring the maximum potential intensity that a hurricane can achieve in light of the climatic conditions in which it forms, which include the sea temperature and also the temperature high in the atmosphere above the storm. Potential intensity was particularly high in the region where Patricia developed, Emmanuel says, so what does this say about climate change? Certainly. Record-breaking hurricanes raise questions about long-standing predictions that global warming by raising ocean temperatures should also strengthen these storms. This issue, however, is beset by data-related difficulties since storm measurement techniques are continually improving and are also highly variable around the world. Thus, hurricane hunter flights are far more common in the Atlantic than in the Northeast Pacific where Patricia was formed. And speaking for myself, they really had to skedaddle. They scrambled that aircraft across the country and flew for many hours to get there. It was quite a heroic effort. and I'm grateful to them. But returning to the article, still, there are widespread predictions that hurricanes should become stronger on average in a warmer world. Summarizing current research, the Geophysical Fluid Dynamics Laboratory of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration puts it this way, quote, anthropogenic warming by the end of the 21st century will likely cause tropical cyclones globally to be more intense on average. This change would imply an even larger increase in the destructive potential per storm, assuming no reduction in storm size, end quote. But of course, it's not the end of the 21st century. It's 2015, so are we seeing the change already with Haiyan and now Patricia? Quoting again, the fact that we have broken records now in the eastern and western Pacific is curious, but we are still dealing with the statistics of small numbers. So inferences are dangerous, end quote. Emmanuel also cautions that because most eastern Pacific storms are not measured by aircraft, there could have been a stronger one in the past that was not detected. Nevertheless, he recently published research suggesting the possibility of hyper-strong hurricanes in certain regions as global warming continues. And once again, departing from that text and speaking for myself, this is a weird hurricane. It was very different. It was shaped differently as far as I can possibly tell. And, of course, I'm not a meteorologist and don't have the time or the finances to conduct a more extensive search. But as I was saying, the thing came in land. It would appear that only the hurricane wall winds were actually hitting. The other winds were aloft and they slammed into the mountains. I mean, it would be like a hurricane coming into the coast of Texas and then not hitting with high winds or rain until it hit, by and large, until it hit Austin. That would be bizarre. And this was bizarre. So you can find more on that article at Sydney Morning Herald. And of course, the easiest thing to do is to search Hurricane Patricia on a news search engine. Time is 9:26. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Coming up soon, we will have Per Fogring. And at the top of the hour, Chris Andre here on KBOO Portland. Now, before I go, I'm going to talk about Houston, Texas. Houston, Texas has defeated a general civil rights guarantee bill, but they did it on the basis of an anti-trans smear campaign. So I am saying boycott Houston. Let me explain. The campaign run by the Christian Hate Coalition has succeeded in rebuilding the old queers are predators lie. Now across the nation, trans women will face violence, especially when they use bathroom and locker facilities. This has been going on for a long time, of course, but I've noticed from long experience that people who want to act out against trans persons take great encouragement from news like this. By refusing to do business with Houston, we can reduce the idea. Now, simmering in reactionary minds across the nation that their long, uncomfortable accommodation to LGBT rights is near its end, or that they should agitate towards that end. I admit in this that I am reaching out to the community, to you, to reduce the danger to my own safety. But the ordinance that was swatted down also protected LGBT rights generally, as well as gender and race equality. Hatred and fear against trans persons, like me, is now a wedge to destroy all rights, save those of white males. It is the spear point of white male supremacy. There are more important campaigns right now, to be sure, notably Black Lives Matter, but this effort is related, and it is relevant, and I have had to return to my precautions. When using public facilities, especially when traveling, I check who is outside the door. I do not speak unless I'm forced to speak, and then I feminize my voice as well as possible. I am careful to wear hose and lipstick. I did on the way back from Mexico, and I did get some grief from people. And I am careful to walk and stand just so. I maintain body balance. I check around corners, all that just to be able to safely relieve myself. How ridiculous is that? Boycott Houston. The 2017 Super Bowl is supposed to be there, and what are they going to do? Hand out bedpans to transgender people? You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for more of the incomparable Radio Zine. We're going out to you via the transmitter at 90.7 FM. I just love to say this. Thank you, engineer. And via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Imperialism, Climate Crisis, and Struggle, an evening with Harsha Walia and Luz Rivera on Sunday, November 8th at 5 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Harsha and Luz will speak about their work and experiences cultivating fierce, loving, and sustainable communities of resistance within a transnational analysis of capitalism, settler colonialism, state building, and racialized empire, and how climate change threatens to or is already compounding the forces of state and corporate violence against which they struggle. Again, that's Imperialism, Climate Crisis, and Struggle, an evening with Harsha Walia and Luz Rivera on Sunday, November 8th at 5 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.